This is Upfront. I'm Kat Brooks. Brian Edwards-Tinkert is in New York. We are going to turn from New York to Washington, D.C., where the media and Democrats are all in a frenzy over allegations that Trump may have tried to bribe the president of the Ukraine, Vladimir Zelensky, holding $400 million, almost $400 million worth of aid to Ukraine, unless Zelensky launched an investigation into former Vice President Joe Biden's son. We're joined this morning by John Nichols, who is a Washington correspondent for The Nation. Good morning, John.
Good morning. It's good to be with you.
Good to have you. So I'm going to just guess that a lot of my listeners are probably like me, and they heard the headline and were like, what does Ukraine possibly have to do with Joe Biden? Help us understand.
Or maybe a little, or maybe nothing at all. We'll find out to some extent. There are charges and complaints that Joe Biden's son, Hunter, who has been involved in lobbying, been involved in a lot of business stuff, was involved with a corporation that had interests. And there is a suggestion on the part of President Trump, which, by the way, has been challenged and has been, at least by some reviews, determined to be incorrect, or at least over the top, that Joe Biden, as vice president, sought to intervene in Ukrainian affairs. That's a bureaucratic-sounding term, to try and get the pressure off a company that Hunter Biden was involved with. And so that's step one. That's where the Joe Biden part comes in. And then now we have this controversy with a suggestion from a whistleblower that President Trump, who may face Joe Biden in the 2020 election, depending on how primaries and caucuses go, in contact with the new president of the Ukraine, made repeated efforts to get the Ukrainian attorney general or legal authorities to ramp up investigations into this affair, these controversies with Joe Biden's son. So to put it all in context, there's a lot of charges and countercharges going back and forth. But at the heart of this is a current controversy in which the president of the United States appears to have used his position to try and pressure a foreign government to investigate the son of a rival with the purpose of undermining or, you know, perhaps even derailing the presidential candidacy of that rival. This is classic abuse of power, if indeed it occurred. There's a lot of backstory here. There's a lot of back and forth on it. But by any measure, what's been raised, the concerns that have been raised with regard to President Trump and that have been advanced just today with New York Times revelations suggesting that Trump may have meddled with aid packages for the Ukraine prior to some of these discussions or around the time of some of these discussions, brings us to a point where it's not at all unreasonable to be discussing impeachment.
Tell me, before we go there, let's say that Joe Biden, Hunter Biden are guilty, allegedly. Uh-huh. What would the consequences be?
Oh, it would be very, very serious. If indeed Joe Biden used his position as vice president of the United States to try and meddle in an investigation that involved his son, or a company that his son would benefit from, that would be a serious abuse. And one that, you know, he is no longer in office. But even if he did it out of office, it would be a deep concern and something that I think would haunt him politically, without a doubt. Certainly, remember, I think that it's very important to understand that these are allegations rather than proven charges. Mm-hmm. And in fact, many of these allegations have been disputed and really upended. And so you're asking a good question, an important question, not just in a legal context, but one in a political context. And I think perhaps it's better understood in that zone, because if you look back at 2016 and you realize that Hillary Clinton had some controversies associated with her, many of them were dealt with by her own testimony to Congress and in other ways, but Donald Trump proved to be brilliant at exploiting those controversies to the very end of the campaign with the purpose of advancing his candidacy. And so when we see something like this associated with Biden, what one must understand is, even if there is no wrongdoing, even if all of the wrongdoing is on President Trump's part, it is frankly beyond imagination that President Trump would let this thing go. If indeed this progresses, I suspect, and he ended up running against Joe Biden, I think he would be talking about it until Election Eve 2020.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think I'm going to call this segment DC Politics for Dummies with John Nichols.
No, it's not DC Politics.
It's horror politics. You haven't heard my next question yet.
Oh, sorry, dear. My apologies.
You may agree. So the other thing, as I'm reading the headlines or listening to them on the news, is I'm trying to figure out how. So Trump supposedly said this to the president via phone call. Who listens to the president's phone calls?
Oh, there should be transcripts. I mean, I don't think there's any question of that. The presidency is different than a personal journey, right? It's not, talking to friends, business associates, political allies, something like that. When you're the president of the United States, you're essentially on the record, not on the record necessarily for the media, but, there is a permanent record that is made. And it doesn't mean that every conversation is always recorded, but overwhelmingly it is. And it's done so for purposes of clarity and diplomacy and continuity, if you will. And the president appears, at least if what I'm hearing is correct, appears to have acknowledged there are transcripts. And as such, those transcripts would be present within the White House and would be present particularly for review by intelligence folks and others. I'm not saying that they necessarily were. There's a lot we don't know, right? But, there's a record here. And one of the big demands at this point is to release that record. And I think that's a really good point of beginning because, if I dare say, in fairness to President Trump, we should see what was said and how it was said.
Right.
Yeah.
But there's some roadblocks to that, right?
So yes, there are.
let's talk about what happens. So the whistleblower comes forward. He goes through the normal protocols. He does not go to the media. They go through the protocols. The Inspector General of the Intelligence Committee, Michael Atkinson, then lets the House Intelligence Committee know. And then what happens?
It appears that the Trump administration has intervened, and at a higher level, inspector generals are supposed to have a lot of flexibility to kind of, keep things straight and clear and pure, if you will, to follow a set of rules, and it's why you have an inspector general. But it appears that at a higher level, the Trump allies, aides, officials have indicated that they don't want to share this information. They're trying to stall this out, right? To say that they do not need to participate in, to cooperate with this. There's a push and pull going on right now between the Congress and the White House.
That's a really nice way of putting it, John.
No, but I'm serious about it. It's like I hate to say that for folks, are good citizens of this country and the people who pay attention to politics, it's best understood as a tug of war. And the Trump administration, you know, president's out there saying, oh, yeah, maybe I'll release the transcript. Maybe I'll, you know, cooperate with this. That's just not the case. They're clearly trying to undermine this process, to try and game it, if you will. And members of Congress are stepping up. And today becomes the critical day because this is not the first time we've been here. We have been at this place again and again and again. What would traditionally, historically, be a difficult relationship between Congress and the White House has become a chaotic one. And it is because the president, frankly, likes that. He sees that as beneficial to him. And so it's chaos. In a lack of clarity, and this goes to the Congress, not to the president, in a lack of clarity on how Congress makes its demands of this president, how it holds him to account, he's exploited every sort of vagueness, every sort of opening, and his aides have done so. They're doing so now. And so the big question of today, and this is going to be, it could be a critical day in the history of the Republic, is will Congress offer a absolutely coherent response? This is particularly the House of Representatives, and it's the leadership of the House. Some members of Congress have been coherent for months, and I will highlight that a member of the Senate, Elizabeth Warren, has had striking clarity on this issue, you know, not just since last Friday, but on variations on this question of how to hold the president to account going back to, you know, April when the Mueller report came out. Some other members of Congress, and I would point especially to people like Congressman Green from Texas, Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and a number of others, have been very, very strong on the need for accountability. But now it has to come from the leadership. It has to be a coherent message. And that's what we'll see today. Will Congress say the president and his people have to cooperate with this investigation in these ways this week, now? And if they don't, we will take this step. And you notice I use the word this rather than filling in the blanks, right?
And because, I was just going to ask you.
In my opinion, the step is to say we will impeach. And I don't say that casually, although if listeners to this radio station will know that over the years I wrote a history of impeachment. I'm a longtime advocate for its use as a part of the system of checks and balances. So, you know, put that up front. But I think that the avoidance of the I word, the avoidance of serious discussion of impeachment, not merely as a tool of punishment, which it shouldn't be viewed as, but rather as a tool of checking and balancing, a tool that must be used when a executive, when a president is abusing his or her position and shows every reason of continuing to do so. So to my mind, that's the this, if you will. The reason I wasn't, you know, using it right up front there is because I'm going to be very interested today when Speaker Pelosi meets with members of the House Democratic Caucus, who, by the way, have been showing increasing signs of support for impeachment, to, you know, hash things out. They're going to do that this afternoon. One presumes that sometime around, oh, I'd say, you know, 5 Eastern, I can't tell you exactly the moment, Speaker Pelosi and others will step to a microphone. They will say something. There's rumors that they will launch a special committee on this. In my opinion, that's not enough. But we'll see what they say about it. And what they say will tend to define a lot of where we are going forward. Because if indeed they go to a point of saying, this is an impeachment inquiry, we are demanding these things of the president. If we don't get them, we will move on some sort of timeline. Then we've entered a whole new stage here. And I'll tell you, one of the things is, as a historian of impeachment, I'll tell you, impeachment can happen fast, not slow. And so it is entirely within the realm of reason that within a matter of weeks, you could come to an impeachment vote.
What do you think would happen with that vote?
I think it would pass the House. I'm not sure of that. But I think that where the Democratic caucus has moved to is, you know, a clear majority, is getting close to an overwhelming majority in the Democratic caucus has spoken up for impeachment. Even many of the new members of Congress who were perceived to be reluctant, a number of them wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post this morning saying it's time to have an impeachment inquiry. That's inquiry versus vote, so I understand there's a little bit of filling in there. But one of the things that I've argued for a long time is that if we understand how impeachment works, if it's a vague concept, right, it's like, we got to impeach the president, a lot of Americans are going to be reluctant on it. If the blanks are filled in, if the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed, and you know what it is about, if it is clearly an impeachment aimed at the prospect that the president abused his office to undermine a political opponent, if it is an impeachment clearly aimed at the president abused his office to enrich himself and his family via, you know, violations of the Emoluments Clause, then you start to fill in the blanks for the people. It becomes a much clearer debate. There will still be opponents of it, but in that moment of clarity, it becomes easier for everybody to take sides. And my expectation would be that once that happened, you would have a very real prospect that the House would vote to impeach. And by the way, that one, two, not a lot, I'm very honest about this, but that one or two non-Democrats, particularly Congressman Justin Amash, who now sits as an independent, but also a couple of our retiring Republicans might vote with the Democrats on that. And then obviously it would move, if they did vote to impeach, probably on a narrow set of concerns, not the broad list that many people know, that would move to the Senate. And this is where it gets interesting, because of course Mitch McConnell, by all evidence, would try to halt it. But if the Democrats in the next weeks were to actually do a good job, and if more came out, if it is in fact the case, and remember we're using the word if here, if it is in fact the case that the president did meddle with aid packages, as especially like defense military aid packages and commitments, and then pressure the president of the United States did this, and then pressure the president of Ukraine to investigate a political opponent, I mean, that is something that you might even find a few Republicans in the Senate were ill at ease with. You might get to a very interesting place politically on that. And remember, as Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has said, I think correctly, you know, the House acts, right? Then you give it to the Senate. If the Senate chooses to clear the president, that is not a failure of the impeachment process. That can be seen as a failure by the Senate. Mm. And you take the names of the people who voted not to hold the president to account for these things, and then at that point, having done due diligence, you turn toward the political side, and you have a 2020 race, which asks the question, should somebody who let the president off the hook on these things be reelected to the Senate? Becomes an interesting, again, now we're changing hats here, right? The constitutional hat we take off, now we put on the political campaign hat. Mm-hmm. But of course, the founders understood impeachment that way. Impeachment is not a legal proceeding. It is a political proceeding. And so it is always going to intersect with politics.
Do you think this is the moment Nancy Pelosi has been waiting for? I mean, she, you know what I mean? I mean,
yeah.
Parts of her party have been pushing her. She's been dragging her feet. And not really wanted to move in this direction. You think maybe this might be the cover that allows her to be like, all right, let's go for it?
That's very interesting and very good question. That's the heart and soul question here. Because, of course, I can't read Nancy Pelosi's mind. I don't know whether she is deeply committed to the political calculation that says, don't do impeachment, just let all this stuff pile up and wait for the 2020 campaign, and that she really doesn't want to do it. The other side is that, no, she's a master political strategist. She knows she couldn't lead on this thing for a variety of reasons, one of which I'll mention in a moment. And so she's waiting for the pieces to come together, and that now they have. And in much the calculus I just described a moment ago, she sees the role for the House here, the possibilities of sending it to the Senate and having it, you know, clarify issues for 2020. And in fact, not being a third rail or a detriment to Democrats, but actually potentially a benefit. I think that's a possibility. Pelosi is a very, very smart strategist. No one should ever underestimate that. It is always a question of whether her strategies are, you know, where they're pointed, right? But one thing that I will counsel, and I think a lot of people forget this in discussions about her, she is in the line of succession for the presidency. And so historically, speakers of the House have not been aggressive leaders on impeachment. They, you know, even when it has arisen, it isn't that they haven't supported or sympathized or helped the process along, but they haven't been, you know, the out front with their, you know, fist up really going there, because, you know, you have a very real possibility that if the president were impeached, and I realize that is that's a prospect that I think, first, it's a tough one to get to that. If he were then removed from office by the Senate, which many people see as an impossibility, but if you did get there, she would suddenly be, you know, essentially in the position where the vice president is now. She'd, you know, one step away from the presidency. And speakers, by the nature of that calculus, always, I think, have to appear reluctant. If they appear too hungry for it, they essentially create a narrative for their opponents.